Simon says you have to stay on topic for 10 minutes. Good luck. There is no way we're getting through this episode alive. I'm your hungover host, Carl, and I'm joined by my Good Samaritan co-host, Alex.
What's up?
And this week we're talking about Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah.
That's Die Hard 3, ladies and gentlemen, which really, honestly, I haven't seen Die Hard 2 in ages.
No.
But having just gone from Die Hard 1 a couple of weeks ago to this, I lost nothing in it.
Yeah, really, you don't lose a whole heap.
No, there's literally, from what I could tell, no reference to the second movie, but plenty to the first.
Yeah, Die Hard 2 is, it's funny, because I'm pretty sure Die Hard 3 was written as a Lethal Weapon movie.
Kinda, yeah. It was. I don't know about Lethal Weapon, but it was, the original script was just called Simon Says, and from what I can tell, from what I've been able to read up about it, the first half of Die Hard with a Vengeance is pretty much word for word the exact script of that original Simon Says movie, except they swapped out the names to Die Hard characters. Like, they basically subbed in John McClane. After that, towards the end, when you start getting into things like, you know, Zeus inquiring about Holly and that kind of stuff, it starts to going a bit more off piece.
Yeah. Warner Brothers bought the Simon Says script, but then they rewrote it. Warner Brothers bought the script and then turned it into a Lethal Weapon sequel.
Yep.
They're like, no, we don't want this. Only then they bought it and by Fox and rewrote it as Die Hard.
Okay.
There was another idea for Die Hard 3, which is when he was on a cruise line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, except it just became Speed 2.
Oh, really? That's Speed 2?
Yeah, they were like, no, this is too much like Under Siege.
Yeah. Okay.
Which isn't actually too far.
Under Siege is pretty close to a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, Steven Seagal beating up people on a naval cruise.
In an enclosed space, no escape, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Got to stop terrorists from launching nukes. It's got Tommy Lee Jones in it. I actually recommend it. It's not a bad film to watch if you're into like this sort of genre.
Mm.
So yeah, it was originally just, yeah, you're right, Simon Says.
Yeah.
But then they did a cheeky little rewrite.
Mm.
But yeah, that kind of makes sense about the fact that the first half is just a...
Apparently, the original script was also based on, I can't remember the name of the scriptwriter, but the idea was the Simon character is based on the idea of, he thought, what would happen if this kid I picked on when we were like kids grew into an adult and then decided to exact some revenge. Apparently, that's an entire thing. Like, that's the original idea he came up with.
That's
which is morphed into then Simon Gruber.
Yeah, which is bizarre because like the Simon Says thing is a lot more violent.
Oh yeah, it's a lot more than I threw a rock at this kid.
Yeah, it's more than I threw a rock at this kid. It's more like, hey, I tortured this kid and now he wants revenge. Yeah, I suppose it makes sense because the first reference to like Nakatomi comes in at, like,
about an hour into the movie.
Yeah,
and this is a long movie.
It's about 45 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, yeah, it came out like 45 minutes into the movie, and I was like, oh, okay.
Mm.
But you've got the characters and stuff, and the...
But the only character that... character from the first movie is John McClane.
Yeah, I would also argue that at the same time, the whole gun tape to the back thing is a reference to the first one.
Yeah.
When he does that, so I liked that touch.
It was also like a really small thing. They just has like the sandwich board takes off, they cut off the sandwich board, and then he's got the gun slapped on his back.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
The guy throws the knife underarm.
Yeah.
Like, he flips the knife and then just throws it underarm in the weirdest way I've seen someone throw a knife.
Yeah.
Like, he winds up underarm. It's not just a flick.
Okay.
Because normally, like, when you throw a knife, you flick it.
I have actually seen knives thrown underarm before, though, like quite accurately, too.
Yeah, I just found it like it was a large gesture.
Oh, he takes a big wind up with that thing.
Yeah, they
make a show of that.
Like, he's got it in his hand and he flips it in his hand and then swings back to throw it underarm.
It's all about the showboating, dude. You can't just toss a knife at a guy's sandwich board.
Yeah, and it's like, Jesus Christ.
Apparently the original, like, the prop for the sandwich board is actually blank, and they CG'd in the text on it.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if he was actually wandering around New York. He was going to get shot.
Oh, somebody would have shot him.
Or, like, punched him at least.
I also love the wind-up to it, where they're, like, in the van driving McClane around, and they're just saying, we'll pick you up in 5, and he's like, that's implying our last 3 minutes out there.
Yeah, and then there's the old lady that he walks past, and kind of just glares at him.
Yeah. I love, like, the work up to it where they just don't show what's on the board.
Yeah, they don't show it until...
until Samuel Jackson gets a look at it, like...
Zeus gets a look at it, Samuel Jackson's character looks at it, and it just says the I hate N... And then it has the N-word on it, and it's like, oh, man. He's wandering around Harlem wearing it during, like...
Which is a bad place to be wearing that sign.
In a majority African-American neighborhood. Oh. Yep.
I like that scene where you've got the kids sitting there saying... Hey, there's a white man out in the street, and he's like, "I've seen white people before, not like this one. You haven't." And he's just like, "Oh, that guy's gonna get killed. He's gonna die
stop
here."
This man from being killed, I suppose.
What a lunatic!
Yeah, utter whack jobbery.
There's also there's a TV edit of that of that scene where they change the sign to just say, "I hate everybody."
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's all CG, like, once again, the prop is just blank, and for each cut, they've just CG'd in the text.
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense. I mean, like, for a TV edit, you can't really show that word on TV.
Yeah. Although it's a whole lot less offensive. Like, I feel like I could walk around with a sandwich board that just says, "I hate everybody," and no one would really care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought you meant like...
No.
No, I was like, oh, buddy, no.
Like, you could walk around in the CBD around here just wearing a sign that says, "I hate everybody," and people would be like, "Yeah, you too."
Yeah, I mean, people wear t-shirts saying that these days.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's right. Just expected. Everybody hates everybody.
Yeah. Especially if you've worked retail.
Yeah. They'd be like, that's a Woolies kid.
Yeah, or, this man obviously works at a Coles.
Yeah.
yes, this man I bought my Maccas off the other day. No wonder he hates everybody. Definitely it was a thing. But I did like that, though, like how it was just all crazy.
Yeah.
Like the opening... Sorry, let me get back to the opening where it's like...
Sure.
It's really calm and it's just like all these nice profiles in New York and it looks very beautiful. Like
You've
early
got that
90s,
music playing on.
Early 90s, late 80s New York, and there's be things like upbeat.
Yeah.
You know? And then a bomb blows up and you're like, what?
Yep, just a massive explosion, traffic jam, car, like vehicles thrown around.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then, like, you just get... Then the movie just kicks in 100%.
Yeah, and the pacing in this movie is great.
Yeah.
I have trouble putting it down. It's just, oh, yes, it's full on the whole time. Yeah. You've just got, like, the way they get... It's well laid out with the with Simon Gruber's Simon Says sequences.
Yeah.
Where there's constantly one going.
Yeah, and there's constantly in a rush to get there.
Yeah, it's always, here's the task, you have this long to do it, go do it.
Yeah.
And so as soon as he completes one task, we're on to the next. And it's always really, there's always so much tension there of will they get there? Will it happen?
Yeah, or will another bomb blow up and hurt people?
And so many bombs go off on this movie.
Yeah. I mean, one of my, I like the bit where the explosive experts for the NYPD just blows something up.
Yeah, he just takes a little like paperclip, dips it in and throws it at a chair inside the police precinct.
Yeah, they're like, what the hell, man?
Dude! He just blew up a chair right in front of people.
Yeah.
Everyone's like leaning around the corner looking in on this bomb expert going, oh man, this bomb's crazy. Watch this. And he just throws a paperclip into a crowd.
Yeah, it's like, dude.
There are so many people looking.
You hit someone, they're dead.
Yeah. That would have killed
somebody. You fumble, you're dead.
Yeah.
But my favorite, I do like that guy because he does get like the redemption like towards the end.
Yeah, Wayne's trying to, Wayne's like sitting there to the last minute trying to defuse the
Yeah, because there's still kids in the building because he finds out there are still kids in the building and he's like, yeah, no, I got to do this.
Yeah. And he just gets sprayed with syrup. I love that one.
I don't know why they couldn't just like pop open the containers though.
The way he was talking about was like... At least the bomb expert brings up he doesn't know how many booby traps are in it.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what kind of... Like, because Simon Gruber seems to be a very proficient at bomb making. So just from the
case...
They
do have the Hungarian expert.
Yeah.
That guy is the bomb maker.
Yeah. So it seems like these guys know what they're doing. So when he pulls the case out of Chinatown and he's looking at it, he says, I don't know... Like, so when they're looking at the school bomb, they say, I don't know what could happen. I could cut a wire and the whole thing will just go off.
Yeah. But what, like, I mean is just like pierce the tubes.
It could, but that's the thing. It could be a case of like if you break, it could be a case of if you break one of those tubes, then it's set to mix. They don't know.
Yeah, but if it mixes with less tube, that's the thing.
But if you pierce the tube and then it decides to mix, it's still going to create a massive explosion. It's still 200 pounds of explosive.
Yeah, you just pierce the two tubes and like vacuum it away separately. But that requires vacuums.
Yeah.
Anyway, aside from that, he does he's good. There's a lot of like good side characters in this. Like there's the head of the major crimes. Mm. There's, you know, his right-hand man. I don't know if he's ever really given a name. He just rocks up now and again. I think you know the one I'm on about.
Which one?
He's the other cop. The one that's not the head of Major Crimes, but is everywhere.
Oh, okay. The one that's like following them as they're going down Central Park, being like, oh, they're taking the scenic route, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the guy. I do not know his name.
Yeah. He's in like every other scene, but like never. he's good. I like that guy.
Yeah.
That was actually one of my favorite bits. Like, they're going taking the park. And the fastest way is go through the park. Look, Park Drive is already backed up. I didn't say Park Drive. I said the park.
He just goes, the park, not Park Drive. What are you on about? Like, we're taking the quick way.
Yeah, and he's just like mowing around people. And he's like, and Samuel Jackson, do you try to hit these people?
Yeah.
No.
I also like how well they put out how much they see it in the idea of John McClane knows this city really well. And he's worked in it that long and cleaned up that much crime. When they leave Central Park and try and get through a traffic jam, he makes he calls in, hey, there's an officer down on this street. And he knows like where they are, where they need to get, where the closest two hospitals are, so that he can get an ambulance to take his route in order to follow behind it.
Like, he knows that the guy has to be there, otherwise any further down it's going to come from the south rather than the east.
Yeah, so exactly.
Can I just say something? The civilians in this damn thing run like Olympic sprinters.
Yeah.
I was watching with the bit where the train blows up.
Yep.
Well, they start the explosives on the train. Mm. If you watch the everyone running away from the goddamn train, they're all making it out there alive. Those people are sprinters.
You gotta be a fast sprint. You gotta be a fast runner to get away from some of this stuff, man. Hey, in all fairness, I'd run pretty quick if I was told there's a bomb in a train exploding in the station.
But like, you just cut and there's just like people like bolting away at the speed of light.
Everyone's an Olympic sprint at the moment. They've got a bomb on a train.
Yeah, no, they're not even on the train. They're just on the platform running away from the train as it swings.
As the train's sweeping.
Yeah, and they just keep running up the stairs and they all make it. And I'm like, what is this?
And I think, like, even after that sequence, the police chief mentions, like, only one person was actually injured in that entire, incident, and they just rolled their ankle.
Yeah. They're all Olympic sprinters.
Like, they
These
did
are
well.
The fittest people in New York.
New Yorkers ain't got time for your terrorist bullshit, all right? They got places to be, goddammit, and they're going to run to the next fucking station because this one's out of whack.
Yeah, they're like, which John McClane half does.
Yeah, guess I ain't taking this fucking train.
Yeah, my one of my favorite bits, though, is that see, I mentioned this to you before the show, and I picked up on it. Like, I've seen this movie a bunch.
Yeah.
And I never picked up on it, but they reference, like, the terrorist attack that happened on the World Trade Center before 9/11.
Yep.
Where they parked cars underneath the building to blow it up from, like, below.
Mm.
It wasn't a successful attack sort of thing.
Nah.
But they do mention, like, the fact that there were explosives there, and I was like, oh, that's tying in, like, sort of real world with this.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah, neat little details. I like that kind of stuff. One thing I noticed in this movie, watching it the other night, was there's a point where in the 911 call center, someone's like, the operator said, the operator mentions, like, okay, all the police traffic's going to be routed through here because they can't use their radios. All the police traffic has to come, like, via phone through this switchboard. And then one of the operators just says, and I'm going to marry Donald Trump. I thought that was really hilarious based on our current climate.
Yeah, current climate where...
Oh, you could have been the first lady.
Yep. So bizarre. That was really just bizarre. It was a truck bomb in 1993 underneath.
Yep. Speaking of trucks, so to get the gold out of the Federal Reserve... Simon Gruber manages to get out, and how many dump trucks did he use?
Like six or seven.
Yeah, like seven dump trucks. Apparently it would take, and I've got the statistic here, to move all of the gold out of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, it would take 480 dump trucks.
Yeah,
that's a lot of gold.
Wait, is this 1993 gold or this currently really old?
I'm not entirely sure, but I can look that up later. I will correct myself.
It's either one. It's still impressive.
It's a lot of gold.
Yeah.
You don't think about that.
I mean, I think the whole point was he wasn't robbing at all. He was robbing.
Oh, no, he took.
Yeah,
the plot of this movie is C-3UP takes all of it. Like, the fact that they find. Like, they leave a couple of bars behind because they're just like, screw it, we've got so much goddamn gold here. Like, that's what Samuel Jackson picks up. He's just like, well, there's one bar on the floor that they just must have let fall off the machine. Now. Yeah. Which and is then, 25 pounds, those gold bars.
Yeah, and then he just leaves it in the dude's car. Yeah. And he's like, oh, you won't be so happy since we... Oh, and it's like, God damn it.
God damn it. I got a question.
Which is funny, because he was lecturing those kids on taking stolen property earlier. Yeah.
I got a question about Zeus. Why did he need to be in the helicopter at the end of this movie? Why did they take Zeus with them? He's not a cop. He's not necessary to go with them anymore because they're not playing Simon Gruber's game anymore. And he's injured, so he's not really going to be much use anyway.
Plot reasons.
Like, it just seems so pointless for him to be there. It's like, why are you in the helicopter? What are you doing? Send the police. Send a different officer. Send like, special weapons and tactics or something. I don't know. Why send Zeus? He owns a store. He didn't even know how to pull the trigger on Gruber.
Yeah, I know. Who knows? Maybe they just wanted a guy there.
They need one extra seat for their... They need someone for the conversation. It was going to be a long ride.
Yeah. My favorite bit, though, is that John McClane still doesn't call Holly.
Oh, God. Well, he calls her and then just leaves her hanging on the line. Like, the one bit of Holly we get in this movie is you can hear her go, John, God damn it, when he leaves the phone just hanging on the payphone.
Yeah.
And that's it. He just runs off.
It's like, did you call her? It's like, no.
I also like how in this movie they stick with the theme of the first Die Hard movie where they need to, like, nerf John McClane somehow.
Yeah.
So instead of taking off his shoes like they did in the first movie, they just made him hungover as hell for this one.
Yeah.
So he's spending the entire movie begging for aspirin. Like, check that guy's glove box if they have some aspirin. Does he have any in his pockets? Hey, have you got some aspirin? And finally it's Simon Gruber that's got some in his pocket.
Yeah. Because in the van, they mentioned the fact that Simon Gruber has migraines, and that's why he's got the aspirin on him.
And it turns out him being like, oh yeah, sure, I'll throw John McClane this one thing, gives him away.
Also, that man should have been ODing on aspirin.
Yeah.
Because this thing takes place in one day. And at the start, he gets in the very first
McClane.
McClane.
Yep.
The very first van he gets in, they give him some aspirin, and he just chews like... 10 of them at once. He chews on them.
He's hungover as fuck.
And then he gets back after the whole thing, the whole Harlem thing, and they give him more aspirin. He just gets more aspirin.
It's been an hour. John, stop. You're killing him.
Yeah, this man's blood must be super thin by now.
He just gets a paper cut and bleeds out on the street.
Yeah, like, this man shouldn't be taking bullet wounds. He'd just be bleeding out. There's no thickness to this blood. It's just high-pressure spray.
I don't think John ever takes an actual bullet in this movie, does he?
I don't know.
I know he gets, like, stabbed with a cable at one point fighting a dude in the ship. But I don't think he ever actually takes a bullet. Like, in the elevator, he manages to get away with getting only the phone shot out. Which is another, like, they do a great job in this movie, in the first Die Hard movies, of constantly, like, give and take, where it's like, here's John's advantage, and they pull it away, where it's like, okay, we'll use the phones to communicate, and then they shoot the phone so he can't get back to the police chief about anything. Like, he can't call him about the president, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of messed up.
No, it's a good plot development.
No,
good plot,
no.
It's a good job to make, like, plot devices, basically, you know, string them along.
Yeah.
And it keeps drama up, like the idea of them having knowledge that they can't relay to the people who need it the most.
Yeah, and it's like,
that's just good drama.
Also, the bit where they can't figure out who Chester A. Arthurton is.
And
it's the truck driver. He's like, who's the 21st president? Oh, Chester A. Arthur. Sorry?
He's just like, oh, see. Also, while you're at it, see if you can find who the 21st president is. And the guy's like a Rain Man of presidents, where he's like, oh, Chester A. Arthur. Did you know that he was this, that, and that? And it's like, I did not. Thank you.
I think that dude was just a Chester A. Arthurton fan because he helped. Like,
just Chester A. Arthur, not Arthurton.
Yeah, Chester A. Arthur. Because he like built infrastructure within New York.
That's true.
And he was an infrastructure worker, so he just knew all these facts about him.
I love the ride John's going in with Jerry, the like truck driver. Where they're going down into the aqueduct and he's just rattling off facts about it. Like, oh, but the crazy thing about it is really the valves, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just like mundane conversation.
Yeah. And it's just like all this like high level drama interspersed with this.
Also, there's a couple of, like the first Die Hard movie takes place on Christmas Eve. And then John McClane throws out a whole bunch of lines about Christmas in this movie, just out of the blue. Like, when he's like in the aqueduct when he's sneaking up on the truck, is just like, hey, have you guys seen a guy come past here? Red coat, big bushy white, like white beard, that kind of stuff. You couldn't miss him. Like there's a few, yeah. I don't have them all written down, but there's a few lines like that where they bring up like Christmas and Santa Claus. Even the kids who are stealing, like, yeah, we're going around stealing stuff because the police are all like running around schools. They're just like, hey, it's Christmas. You could steal City Hall, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I actually like the thing that I find most interesting is that so John McClane lies to Zeus to get him in because they found the bomb in Chinatown, but he told him they found it in Harlem.
Yeah,
and then
This guy's like his whole argument was this guy like you may have a problem with like not wanting to get involved in white people business.
Yeah,
but this guy doesn't care about black or white. He's bombing whoever the fuck.
Yeah, and then it turns out that the bombs in the school his nephews are in.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
Well, guess you're roped in now, pal.
Yeah, it's like, turns out, a good thing you came along.
Yeah, thanks for helping, because otherwise your kids might be dead.
If that was an actual bomb.
Yeah, except if it weren't full of syrup.
Yeah, I like the idea, though, that they were trying to blow up all the gold, but it was just fake.
Yeah. Well, even then, Simon Grubb is playing a very interesting and dangerous game here, where he's been hired by, I don't even remember who he was hired by, some Middle Eastern like group that wants him to blow up all the gold in the Federal Reserve and are paying him to do that because if he does so, then it'll destabilize the US and help the economy of their country and whatever that kind of stuff. But then in the process, he just blows up a whole bunch of scrap metal because who cares? Like, sure, they can go digging around for scrap metal. Who gives a shit? Meanwhile, he just runs off with all the gold.
Yeah, he's
hell yeah.
To buy any nation in the world, basically.
Yeah, you could. That's the thing. He's got the like collective wealth of so many countries right there.
Man, what would I do with all that gold?
What would you do with the billions of gold he Simon Grubber sneaks off with?
I don't know. Buy a house in Melbourne. Probably take most of it.
You could maybe buy a house in Brunswick and then be done.
Maybe. Who knows with this housing market?
Maybe if you could get that close. You might be able to get as close as Coburg.
Oh, maybe.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. Well, let alone places like Toorak. God.
Oh, gosh. Sneaking out as far as Cranbourne.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Maybe
if you get a good location, maybe in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe
crime-ridden area.
Maybe I'll be able to buy a house in, like, I don't know, some sort of Sydney outer suburb. If that. Have to live in Canberra to go to Sydney.
Best response.
I don't know what I do.
I
just make a lot of things, make some passion projects. Wonder how I got this much money to begin with without committing a crime. Worry about all my taxes. That's a lot of income, mate.
You're going to get audited immediately.
No, mate.
People can ask questions.
It's all legit. I reported my income to the tax office. Oh, okay.
Provide you tell them where you got it from. Oh, I got it from the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yeah, and then I'm going to move it all to Switzerland.
Smart move. They don't ask questions.
And now I also now live in Monaco. It's a tax-free state.
Beautiful place.
It's a tax-free area. Hmm. Got to live that tax-free life.
I do like, speaking of the like millions of dollars they're breaking out with, I like that Simon Grubber knows when to fold them. Like, he knows when to give up.
Yeah.
Because he just chooses to let one of the dump trucks full of gold, he's willing to flood it and leave it behind. Yeah. He knows that, okay, those two guys are dead, and John McClane's there. Screw it. Not worth going back for. Let the gold go. Because he's not willing to risk himself, which is clever. Yeah.
He's number one.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not willing to send any more of his men because then he's going to lose even more gold.
Yeah.
He risks sending another truck, which means not checking out. And even then, like, I like that they point out that a lot of his team aren't actually monsters as well.
Yeah.
Like, when Zeus is taking the bomb, like the case, like bicycling up to these police officers who are actually watchers for Grubar.
Yeah.
Zeus should have known something was up by the way that this is a white policeman right there who he hands a bomb to and they treat him with respect.
Yeah.
Like the last time he saw a police officer, the guy pointed a gun at him for being an asshole.
Yeah.
Like for raising his voice.
Yeah. And jumping the gate.
Yeah. The guy pulls a gun on him for that.
Yeah.
And then he just says, oh, don't open that. That's a bomb. And they go, Oh, we'll treat this with the utmost importance. Thank you, good citizen.
Yeah,
like that should have really tipped him off right there. I was like, hang on, no, you don't.
At this point, because he's working with the cops, it's a bit of a leeway.
Yeah, but
you're right.
Darren will know who he is.
And
I also like that those cops, that one of them just tries to set the bomb down on the street and leave it, and the other one goes, "No, put it in the back." And they're like, "Why? It's a bomb." And he says, "Yeah, but a kid could pick it up. Some kid could find it." Like, these guys aren't monsters. They're like, "Dude, this could hurt somebody." Like, they're willing to think about civilians and children.
Oh, well, like, to be fair, their thing is like, we're blowing this up for this plan.
Yeah.
Anything else we don't need.
Yeah. They're not awful. They're not entirely awful people.
Yeah.
They're, like, sure, they're morally wrong. They're on the sliding scale of moral grayness. Yeah. But they're not completely evil where they're just like, nah, fuck it. We're going to leave a bomb on the side of the street for a kid to blow himself up.
They're not, like, really chaotic.
Yeah.
It's more like, oh, we've got this plan. We're going to stick to this evil plan. And that's our evil plan.
Yeah.
It's like earlier when they're trying to take over, like, the bank. They shoot the guy.
Yeah.
One of them shoots the guy. And they're like, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
Because there was no need to kill him, and they just were like, why'd you kill him?
Dude, what the fuck? And that's the one guy who doesn't speak English
as well. Yeah, Otto.
Yeah.
Who's, I think he's Hungarian. Mm. I think they mentioned that he's one of, like, someone's brutes.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like a ride-along for this. Like, he's not part of the same group.
Yeah, I don't think he's part of, like, the German infiltration group. He's the Hungarian weapon experts.
Yeah.
One of his men. And it's just like, God. And they don't like him.
They don't.
Like, this is unnecessary.
I also like the McClane does a good bit of police work there, where when he gets into that elevator, he manages to pick up on the badge number.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, I saw that badge number earlier today. You're not a police officer at all. And that's how he immediately picks up. These guys are not, like, these guys are definitely plants. I also like the scene before that when Gruber's entering the, like, when Gruber's inside the bank and the bank teller, or the bank owner or teller, I can't remember what he is, has the line of, I thought, like, he turns around and sees them, like, wrestling with all the security at the bank and, like, taking the place over, and he just goes, I thought this was a currency exchange.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, no, it's a bank robbery now, son.
Yeah, the other thing about it is that, the other thing about the whole scene with the badge number and stuff is that because in the earlier scene, they mention everyone playing their badge number in the lotto.
Yeah.
They're like, half the cops in New York play their badge numbers.
Yeah.
And so that's, like, ties in with that as well.
Mm.
It's like neat.
Yeah.
Ties in all very nice. The only time John McClane does police work. Rather than just shooting a man.
But I do like that they showed McClane doing good, like, actual police work in this movie. And it shows how McClane's actually, he's a bit of a loose cannon, but he's actually a good cop.
Yeah.
Like, he knows what he's doing, and you can see why they keep him on the force, because he does get the job done and he knows what's
up. It was on suspension, mate.
Yeah. But that's the thing. He's on suspension. He's not out of the force.
No, he's not out of the force yet.
But
going to be soon.
What, after the events of Die Hard 3, surely they'd keep him around.
Yeah, I think he's still a police officer in Die Hard 4, actually.
Yeah.
Which I do is like... like 15 years later.
Yeah. God, yeah, you're not wrong.
Actually, no, I think it is like 15 years.
It came out like 10, at least 10 years later. Like, this came out in 95, 94?
Yeah, it's Die Hard 4 came out in Die Hard came out in 95.
Yep.
Die Hard with a Vengeance, that is. And yeah, that's, and Die Hard 4 came out in 2007. Live Free or Die Hard.
Wow. Oh yeah, 4 was Live Free, Die Hard.
Yo, yep. Die Hard 4.0 in Australia.
It's so weird that they have double titles for that one. It's weird.
Live Free and Die Hard, I think, is like, that saying is an Americanized saying.
Okay.
Whereas 4.0 still accurately reflects the fact that it's a technological thing more than anything else.
Yep. Good point.
Yeah, Kevin Smith is in that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one in so long.
Yeah, apparently all his lines were, like, ad-libbed.
That actually doesn't shock me for something Kevin Smith would do.
Yeah.
I like that guy. He's good. He's a good storyteller.
Bit of Kevin Smith trivia for you. I once apparently read that he went to a Q&A. It was like he was the A bid. He was the answering.
Yeah.
That lasted 12 hours.
You know what? That doesn't surprise me.
He just stayed there for that long. And I'm like, Jesus. That man is a legend.
Like, I love seeing, like, this is one of my, like, little passions I love doing, which is going onto YouTube and just watching, like, Q&As with Kevin Smith. Because he'll take one question and then go on for 45 minutes. And you never lose focus. Where someone will be like, hey, can you tell the story of, like, when you asked to write a Batman script? And he goes, let me tell you about the time I was asked to write a Batman script. And he goes into all the details of it, and he's just a great, like, I love listening to him talk, and he can talk, and he's funny, and he's just really good at it.
Okay, so I found out that Kevin Smith does, like, YouTube reviews.
Yeah, he does. I don't quite watch those as much. I don't know. He had a line about Suicide Squad, and I thought, nah, I can't agree with that.
What was it?
He really liked Suicide Squad.
Oh, no, I can't agree with that.
Yeah.
How?
I don't know. There was some talk that maybe it's because he knows David Ayer personally.
Oh, okay.
And so maybe that was a bit biased. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's... I know he's talked about how he liked Fury, which yeah. I like Fury. It's a good movie, but...
Yeah, that's fair enough. But yeah, no, there's definitely some of his stuff is really good. But anyway, aside from Die Hard, I think this is the earliest film... No, wait, scratch that. I've seen Jurassic Park.
What's this?
I thought this was the earliest thing I'd seen...
Samuel L. Jackson?
No, Jurassic Park is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Jurassic Park would come out like...
93.
One or 2 years before this. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 years before this, 93. Yeah, so it turns out it's not the youngest I've seen Samuel L. Jackson. But it's up there.
Yeah, it's in the same... It's of the same era.
Yeah, it's definitely like that early to mid-90s film.
Mm. I got a question.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that you'll get this better than I did. So one of the puzzles that Simon has them do is they're at the fountain with the 2 gallon gallon drums.
Yeah.
We've got like the 5 gallon and the 3 gallon. Fill one with 4 gallons. Problem solved.
Yeah.
They explained how to do that really quick, and I didn't catch how to do it at all.
I know
that puzzle.
I know this one. It's So what you do is you fill the 5 gallon drum up.
Yep.
If you put it into the 3 gallon drum.
Okay, so you tip out the 5 gallons into the three. So, yeah, you've got one with two and one with three.
You tip out the three. You put two into the three.
Yep.
And then you fill the 5 gallon drum up again. And then you put the five into the two. So you've got 4 liters in the 5 gallon drum and 3 liters in the other. So you tip.
Hang on. So you fill the five, tip it into the three.
Yeah. So then
and then you tip out the remainder in the five.
So no. So what you do is you fill up the five.
Yep.
You put what you have of the five into the three.
That way you've got two.
Two and three.
Yep.
You tip out the three.
Yeah.
Then you put the two into the three.
Right.
So it's only 2/3 full.
Okay. So now you've got 2 liters in the three.
And the five is empty.
Yep.
Yep. So then you fill up the five.
Yep.
And then you fill up the rest of the three. So you've got 3 and 4. So you tip out the three and you've got 4 gallons.
I'm trying to do this in my head right now.
Do you need a diagram?
I might. I just don't know where you get the four.
You've emptied. So in the three gallon drum.
Yep.
You have 2 gallons.
Yeah.
And you've got a full 5 gallons.
Yeah.
So what you do is you put one of the gallons from the 5 gallons to fill up the 3 gallons. So that's got three now, and the other has four.
Oh, yep. Okay. So yeah, you have. That's right. So you have one. Yeah, because you need to remove one from the five.
Yeah, you need
so
you to fill just it remove up with, five. You fill it up with two, and there you go. That's how you get 4 gallons of water.
Okay. Now I get it. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a...
That one was doing my head in for a bit, where I was just like, no. No.
I've had to do it in some sort of video game before. That's how I know how to do it.
Okay.
Like, really quickly.
Yeah. Okay.
I always forget, and then I have to think about it. I'm like, no, it's just this. Yeah, it's really abstract.
It's a few more steps than you'd think. It's mostly about trying to get the empty space.
Yeah, it's the empty space that you need rather than anything else.
I also love just before that when there's when they have to try and find the next puzzle. Simon Gruber has like that riddle of what has four legs and is always ready to travel or something like that.
Yeah,
and Simon McClane has no idea what it is. He's like, Zeus just mentions, oh, don't you have kids? It's an elephant. That's an easy one. And it's like, yeah, McClane has kids, but he hasn't seen them in a long time.
See, that's the reason why Zeus is in this film is because he is the brain.
Yeah. I like that they do have skills that complement each other, though. They do, what Zeus can't do, McClane makes up for, which is that McClane can fight and knows what he's doing with a gun.
Yeah.
And also is like has that deductive police work knowledge behind him.
Yeah.
Whereas Zeus makes up for with a bit more brain power and a bit more street smart.
And especially the abstract thinking.
Yeah.
My actual favorite thing is still the is when they're dialing in the number about the once I was traveling to St. Ives.
Yep.
I mean, and it's like, no one's going to St. Ives. What are they doing? They're sitting in the road. I don't know.
I don't give a shit. are they doing in Sana? Like, yeah, that's a great one. It's just a math problem. But he says, what are they doing in St. Ives? Who gives a shit what they're doing in St. Ives? They're there.
That's one of my it's one of my favorite like riddles, because it's always like just so, it's just abstractish.
Yeah, it's the one. It's one of those riddles that the whole goal is to mislead you. It's a bit of it's kind of got that same element of like a magic trick where the goal is to set up, like, give you the answer.
Yeah.
But then set up so much afterwards that you don't, that at that point you're too focused on that number.
Yeah.
You're sitting there trying to do 7 times 7 times 7 times 7, like trying to get like what is a cubic root of whatever, when really it's just 1.
Yeah.
And the rest of it's there just throw you off.
Yeah.
So it's not a math problem.
You try to do all this math, but the answer is just 1.
Yeah. It's not a math problem.
No.
It's just a did you listen problem.
Yeah.
Which I was like,
it's like, what is he doing? I'm listening.
Sitting in the road. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. This is also pretty good with like the one liners.
Yeah. It's got some strong one-liners in this one, doesn't
it? It's always got like a good reaction. Like, it's a good action film. It's what it is. It's the most similar to the first one, I think, out of all of them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely closer to the first one. It's got references to the first one. It ties in really well, since Simon Gruber is Hans's brother, and we get like references to them and their relationship just a little bit, like just a couple of nuggets. It's not entirely necessary, but it does tie it together.
Yeah, it ties it together. Like, it makes it like a narrative thread rather than just like, here's another anthology movie, basically.
Yeah.
Tales from McLean.
Tales from John McLean. Oh, where's that wacky John McClane gonna end up next? Ooh-wee.
Now I'm just thinking of the future Tales of Interest. Those are the best episodes.
Dude, the anthology Futurama episodes were always great. Futurama was such a brilliant show. But let's not talk about Futurama today.
Let's talk about it another day.
Yeah. Surely we can bring up a Futurama movie another time.
Which one?
Oh, I wouldn't.
Oh, we could do the double one, Beast with a Billion Backs, and the Bender's Big Score, because the Bender's Big Score leads into Beast with a Billion Backs.
Or even just one of like the TV movies, like whatchamacallit, Into the Wild Green Yonder, or...
Was that a TV movie? I thought that was just one of the episodes.
No, they coupled them. They coupled, like, I think 4 episodes together for a couple of, like, runs, so you could get them as... Like, so you can actually buy... Like, they're on TV for, like, 4 episodes... Or you can also get them as as like a DVD set that's just the movie.
And yeah, that's Bender's Big Score and Beast of Billion Backs. They're the
which
same.
One's Beast of Billion Backs?
The one with Evo.
Oh,
the pink
okay.
tentacle thing. They lead into another, but they're each like 4 episodes long.
Okay.
They're both TV movies. That's when they were doing that season that wasn't a real season kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh wait, yeah. Like I forgot which one it was. Which one? Into the Wild Green Yonder. That's the mini golf one, yeah.
Yeah, that's the mini golf and it's, the Violet Dwarf.
Yeah, it's of a similar vein.
Yeah,
that's what it. Those two are of a similar vein to that one.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, there was 3 of them. That's right.
Yeah, then that's all 3.
Yeah,
I haven't seen Into the Wild Green Yonder as much.
Okay, I think I've seen that one the most of the 3 of them.
Because that's the one where Fry has telepathy.
Yeah,
and the tinfoil hats.
Eons ago. Yeah. How are we talking about Futurama right now?
I don't know.
I love this show.
Back to the movie.
There it is, but it only took us 39 minutes.
Yeah, we stayed on topic, actually.
Wow, I think we might have gone 10... I'm going to double check when I edit this, but I think we might have gone 10 minutes focused on the movie.
Good thing we didn't die.
I know, right?
But yeah, so... This is one of my favorite Die Hard films.
This is, I think, second best.
Yeah.
You know, it's on par with the first one, but it's not quite got the exact make of the first one. This one travels a bit more. It's no one's trapped anywhere.
Yeah.
But I
feel like the whole traveling thing, they do it well, because like the traveling in the original Die Hard wasn't quite as fast paced, but because it was a restricted area, it felt. But like with this one.
Well, the
area,
whole point of the original Die Hard is that they're locked in.
Yeah.
It's that no one can get in or out. That's the whole shtick. In this one, it's a bit more free roaming. It's across New York.
But it's like very fast paced.
Yeah.
I think it's faster paced.
Oh, this one's definitely faster paced. There's a bit less lull moments in the first one, where you've got, in the first one, you have a lot more of like McLean sitting on the radio waiting for something to happen. A bit more a bit more dialogue heavy. Whereas this one, it's all that sort of dialogue and character moments are usually, except for until right up to the end.
Yeah,
it's usually delivered real fast as just these two characters shouting at each other.
Yeah,
it's usually just two people calling each other an asshole, and then we learn something about one of them.
Yeah, my favorite thing though is so I'd rank the Die Hards: Die Hard, Die Hard 3,
yep.
Die Hard 4, Die Hard 2, Paul Blart: Mall Cop, Die Hard
5. Don't lump Paul Blart Mall Cop into this.
Oh,
right?
And after Die Hard 5, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
We should actually bring up, we saw Paul Blart Mall Cop recently.
Yeah.
And I was really disappointed by how long it takes that movie to start.
Yeah.
Most of the movie is set up, which is wrong. This Die Hard 1 and Die Hard 2, it takes less than 10 minutes for the movie to become the movie. And even then, Die Hard 3. Like, Die Hard with a Vengeance, in this movie, it starts instantly. Like, you have opening montage, bomb explodes, then they're making the phone call to John McClane. That's the movie. The first one is, like, that's when it starts. And now we're on track. We're going. Die Hard 1, it takes about 10 minutes for John McClane to get off the plane, get to Nakatomi Plaza, figure that stuff out. And then about 10, 11 minutes in, Hans Gruber starts doing his whole thing. Then the movie begins. Paul Blart fucking Mall Cop. We have 45 minutes, which is half the runtime of the movie, going, oh, here's that crazy Paul Blart. Oh, here's what it's like being a mall cop. Here's all this and that, and here's the romantic side plot, and here's his daughter, and it takes so damn long. Here's them at a bar, or he embarrassed himself and got a tattoo. It's so much work to eventually, okay, 45 minutes in, now we've locked down the mall.
Yeah.
And then the movie starts. Next week, to round off sequels month, we'll be looking at some of our favorite, least favorite, or just interesting sequels that we want to talk about. See y'all next week. Bye.